Hi everyone, it's Gavin J, the best thing since the colour blue. And you listen to Therapy Suite right here on UKF Radio, the world's number one talk health radio. This week I speak to Claire Beasley, who's established a community interest company called We Stand, which is an organisation raising awareness around psychological abuse. Claire, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Hi there, I'm really good, thank you, Gavin. How are you?
It's been a long week already.
It really has, yeah.
Just by listening to this, today's a Tuesday that I'm recording, so, you know.
Yeah, it feels like Friday already.
And you've got a new job as well, isn't it? So you've got like loads going on.
I have so much going on. I have too much going on, if I'm honest.
Well, look, Claire, tell us a bit about yourself and your background and how you got to where you are today. I think that'd be great for the listeners to listen to.
Sure. Well, my background is actually I work in charities. So I have actually just started a job with another new charity recently, which is why I'm so tired. But I've spent about 16 years working in the charity sector. And so I decided at the tail end of last year that this new venture I was setting up with my partners, which I'll tell you about a little bit more in a second, I thought, you know what, I'm actually going to set this up as a charitable thing rather than setting up as some kind of business or partnering with another charity, partly because it's just way easier to get funding and stuff like that. But also, I just felt like it was the better way to go. And having had so much experience in the charity sector, I thought that would sit with my skill set really, really well. My background is I have, on the side of my desk, been doing lots of little projects, working with women, mostly to support their sort of mental health growth. I've been teaching yoga classes, I've done coaching, I've helped women write their books, I've written a book myself. I basically am kind of a feaster of different activities and projects that interest me. And then I go off and start doing things. I'm trying to make a difference in the world. So that's kind of really where I've come from.
That's brilliant. You do loads.
I do. I do too much, really. I'm trying to like, not fit as much stuff in, but that's not really happening at the moment. So, you know, it keeps me out of trouble anyway. So,
have you written a book yet or going to?
I have, yes. So I released my book last year, actually. It was almost a year ago to the day. So that was actually what kicked off this entire project in the first place, because the book is about psychological control in actually it's in a familial relationship, but it also bleeds into romantic relationships as well. And I wrote the book because I had seen a friend of mine. This is quite a long story. I'd seen a friend of mine who is an amazing ballet dancer starring in a ballet called Nora. The ballet was based upon the play written by Henrik Ibsen called A Doll's House. And in that play, the woman leaves her family because her husband is abusing her. Now, that play was written in 1879. A very, very long time ago. And obviously back then, the idea of a woman leaving her family, seeking a divorce, was so taboo, he actually had to change the ending of the play for it to be allowed to be shown in Germany. Because in his original play, she doesn't come back, and they insisted that she had to see the error of her ways and return back to the family, because it's such a taboo thing for women to leave their families. And now, however many hundreds of years later, we are still in that situation where women are frowned upon for leaving the family home. It's a very taboo subject. And that's what my book touched upon, was that the psychological abuse that this woman experienced was so bad she had to leave the family. And I wanted to explore what that would be like then for the children that were left behind and what they would need to do to cope, how they would process that. And actually, the book follows the daughter of this woman and her relationship with her father, who is the abusive person in this particular novel. So yeah, all complete fiction, but I wanted to explore, you know, what that would look like, how it would feel, how people would cope with it, that kind of stuff, and start to lift the lid on the fact that actually sometimes women do have to make these really difficult choices and put their mental health first.
100%, absolutely.
Yeah.
Can't agree with that more. I think anybody, you know, the ladies, gentlemen, etc., doesn't matter, you know, anyone, children, doesn't matter, you need to put yourself first, make sure your mental well-being is okay before you can even help other people or be supportive, isn't it?
This is it, absolutely. And, you know, if you're struggling yourself and you don't know how to cope with a situation, either, you know, I'm now working for a disability charity and, you know, this is something that we explore a lot, is the mental health of the people that we support. As a parent myself, you know, if I'm not mentally fit to be able to support my children, then I need to take some time in order to get myself mentally fit again. You know, it's the same for anybody. If you're feeling like you can't support yourself and you're not able to cope with things going on around you, then you're not going to be able to support those around you either. So you do have to put yourself first sometimes.
100%, 100%. Talk to us a bit about why you set up We Stand.
Okay, so after I released my book last year, I was working with my PR agency and they were like, right, so you need to go and start establishing some collaborations. I love collaborations. Anyone's like, hey, why don't we do something together? I'm like, let's go do that. So I was mooching about on the internet, as you do, and I was on Instagram and I came across this, I don't even remember how, but I came across this theatre company who'd made a film about postnatal depression. And I was like, wow, that is so incredibly powerful. It's also one of the themes that was in my book. And I was like, this could be amazing. We could set up an amazing collaboration here by turning perhaps my book or parts of my book into a play or into a film. So I contacted them and I said, hey, fancy doing a project together? And they were like, yeah, okay. So we had a few meetings and we talked about what we would want to do and how we might approach it. And that's how the project got sort of started. And then we were like, okay, now we need to think about how we get this funded, how we're going to do that. So we were like, oh, crumbs, unless you're a charity, it's actually pretty difficult to get the sort of level of funding that we might need for something like this, because it's an educational performance that we want to be doing aimed at young people. And we want to be able to form it in schools. You know, we need a far reach for this kind of thing. It isn't like we're going to do like something in one school in my local town. This is like nationwide that we have aims for. So in order to have the gravitas and apply for the funding that we needed to set up our own organization. So we decided that we would. And me, I'm always busy. I'm like, I've got lots of charity background. How hard can it be? So so the tail end of last year, I had a couple of meetings with some extremely helpful, very generous people who gave me some of their time completely free and helped talk me through how to set up. Actually, we're not setting up a charity at this stage. We're setting up what's called a community interest company. So it has less of the red tape, shall we say, that a charity has to hop through, but is still a very rigorous and regulated like non-profit body, if you like. So it's all very above board. And everything that we have to do has to be sent through to the regulator and is monitored by Companies House and blah, 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 blah. But it just means that we're able to apply for our own funding. And there's a board of directors I work with and my partners are on it. And yeah, it's working very well so far.
Brilliant. Talk to us a bit more of the detail of We Stand and what it does and who it helps and that kind of thing.
So We Stand, we chose the name because we are standing for something a little bit different in this area. So there is a lot of amazing charitable organisations already set up to support victims and survivors of abuse. There's Refuge, there's Women's Aid, you know, there's a huge number of local charities, thousands, in fact, based all over the UK. What we're doing that's slightly different is more of the educational piece. So I feel as though we're not making the sort of headway that I would want us to be making in this area. You know, there's still an awful lot of abuse happening. It's in the news all the time. We've all seen the things happening with the Met Police. We've seen everyone's invited stuff with the things that are going on in schools. You know, there's, if anything, maybe it's just social media and it's more obvious to us now, but it feels like it's getting worse instead of better. So we decided that actually what we needed to do was focus our attention on young adults. So people who are under the age of 25 are the highest risk category for those who are likely to experience abuse. Women are more likely to experience abuse than men, but we're trying to be fairly gender neutral with this because actually everybody needs support. And yeah, the reason we wanted to call ourselves We Stand is that we stand for change. We stand for, you know, supporting not just the victims, which absolutely need support, but also the people who are labelled perpetrators, which I find quite an uncomfortable label anyway. But, you know, the people who might be inadvertently hurting others, especially when it comes to psychological abuse, it's something that is so misunderstood and so poorly defined. You can be in a sort of relationship where you're being abused or you are abusing someone and not even realize because we're so conditioned to the things that we say and do. So we want to get rid of that polarization and just come at it with a really supportive framework to help young people understand what this kind of control and abuse looks like.
And it can be quite, it can be subtle to the point where the person doesn't know actually that they're being psychologically abused, and it can be so underhanded. Yeah. And I'm guessing that's where We Stand coming, you know, raising awareness around the different types of psychological abuse. Is that correct? And kind of giving examples, is that right?
Yeah. So what we're looking really, as you say, it's that kind of insidious drip, drip, drip that you get with this kind of abuse. Coercive control is defined as a crime. Yeah. So, you know, you can actually go to jail for coercively controlling someone. However, most amounts of abuse don't start with someone like taking all of your money off you in a really obvious way or locking you away in your house so that you can't escape. Right. So most of it's going to be starting with much more subtle, maybe insults or saying, I don't want you to see that person. I don't really like them. I don't think they're very nice to you. So framing it in a way that the survivor doesn't notice that they're being controlled. So abuse is about control. But if in the eyes of the law, unless you're meeting the threshold of serious harm, i.e. you are being locked in your house or your money's being taken away, there's nothing that the law can really do for you. So we're looking at a different level of abuse. We're not looking at that really serious crime level of abuse. We're looking at that subtle stuff that starts maybe at a younger age, maybe is something that you just don't even recognise as being abuse, either as the abuser or the abused person. And what we're trying to do is lift the lid on what that really looks like, and support and change attitudes so that, you know, we can actually start making a difference in this area rather than it being, well, you're a criminal, you're going to prison. There's just so much more subtlety to it than that.
No, absolutely. We're just going to go to a quick ad break and we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Love and laugh. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Kiss me quick. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
Strawberries and cream.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
So, clear. Thanks for that. I mean, you know, I'm just, I think the work that you do is great. And it's, you know, you've kind of thrown your whole life into being involved in charities and obviously helping the wider population. As part of We Stand, who's part of this project at the moment?
So there, essentially, is there's four of us. So we're all directors because that's how you have to set up the company. So there's myself. And my background is like charity work and project management and just generally being a bit of a busybody.
Yeah. Your diary, your daily diary must be absolutely crammed with stuff, you know.
It is. And then my partners are an organisation called Divergent Lives, and I'm working with Dr. Emma Offord. So we've known each other for a few years because she has supported my family with some of our mental health stuff. She's worked with me and some members of my family, and she has helped us with my diagnosis of being neurodivergent and helping to understand myself a little bit better. And she is just this incredible woman who is so caring and supportive, and has had vast amounts of experience in the psychological trauma and recovery space. She's worked with people in prison. She's worked with, you know, victims of like serious abuse. You know, she's worked with perpetrators, the whole thing. So she's incredibly experienced. So that's our kind of wonderful doctor lady. Then we have our more creative side of the team. So we've got Becky, who is the director of Falling Stars Theatre. So she is the lady who I contacted originally, who made the film about the postnatal depression. And she runs this amazing theatre company, but some performances mostly up north. We're doing a bit of a north-south like joining up thing here as well, which we quite liked. And then there is Kirsty from Minds Matters for Education. So she is our kind of educational guru. They both have backgrounds in education, but Kirsty is particularly good at setting up and building workshops for young people and doing that educational piece. So between the four of us, we have quite a range of really useful skills and contacts into the charitable sector and various other different areas that we need to get moving to make an impact in this area. So I'm so excited to be working with them because they're all just brilliant. I love them.
It sounds like you all gel well together as well. And do you all hang out socially as well?
Well, no, because we're all like mad busy.
I was just going to say, you know what? You don't hang out socially because you're doing this all socially as well.
Yeah. I mean, we're doing this as volunteers, so we don't get paid for like running this organisation. We all have our own businesses or day jobs. And yeah, I mean, Becky and Kirsty are based up in Yorkshire. We're down here in Cambridgeshire. So Emma's not that far away from me, but we're all just so incredibly busy all the time. We only really get to meet online, which is very depressing. However, I'm very excited because Becky and Kirsty are coming down tomorrow because we've got some focus groups happening with one of the secondary schools in my area. So they are actually coming down to meet me tomorrow and spend a couple of days with me doing lots of like projecty stuff together. So that's going to be really good.
Excellent. I think that's brilliant. I think it's good that I think it helps when you kind of, as well as I know like Zoom and Microsoft Teams has become the norm for a lot of people, but there's an extra edge when you meet up with people and then you go away. There's that more, there's more of a connection, isn't there?
Oh, so much so. I really miss, I hardly left my house for 3 years because of the whole COVID thing.
Yeah.
You know, and I've become so used to working from home, which I love. I mean, it's great. My office is like 3 steps from my bedroom, which is fab.
That's brilliant, isn't it?
It has meant that I just don't leave my house very often, so it's quite good to actually meet up with people face to face for a change and spend some like real time with people in real person. And it's like, wow, what a treat.
absolutely. I think we say that it's nice to work from home and everything, but I mean, it's got its disadvantages. I think as humans we were kind of designed to be around people all the time. So while it's not, it's convenient, and I think it's convenient for families as well. If you've got children and the hubby and all the rest of it, it's just a bit more convenient, that's all. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's definitely got its pros and it's got its cons. I think it's a, you know, one of those double-edged swords, you know. Why do you focus mostly on younger adults?
Well, as I said earlier, they're one of the higher risk groups from abuse in their relationships. But also, you know, we're still like forming our opinions. Our brains are still developing right up until the age of like 25, 26, which explains why I have to say in my early 20s, I had a lot more rage than I do now in my early 40s. So you definitely felt the switch when everything was coming online better. But it's really because we want to support that group particularly, A, to have more healthy relationships themselves, but also as they're growing older and then they have their own children and, you know, they can advocate for this kind of different way of looking at things. You know, there's a huge amount of appetite in that age group to be activists, to change the world, to kind of do things a little bit differently. So I think it's tapping into that energy that younger people have, plus also supporting their own vulnerabilities as well. You know, schools nowadays are expected to do almost all the heavy lifting in terms of social care. And, you know, I really do take my hats off to secondary schools and the amount of strain that they're under to not only deliver a huge curriculum, but also to, you know, provide pastoral care, emotional support, in some cases, you know, school uniforms, food, everything that you could possibly need, which actually, you know, we're kind of missing in our social care these days. And some of these kids really need a lot of support. And the children, you know, the teachers, you know, aren't necessarily equipped or have the time or capacity to think of all of the things that they need to cover in their PHSE classes. So what we're trying to do is offer something that will be free to them. So this is partly why the funding is so important, because I don't want the schools to have to pay for us going in and doing a performance with them to help educate the children. This should be free to the end user. So that's really important for us. But also, you know, schools are under a lot of stress and strain and they want to do this work, but I feel like they need a bit of support to do it as well as they could do, you know. So that's why we're aiming at that age group.
100%. And I can totally understand that, because it's that age where, you know, you've got the young in school, they're, you know, they get into relationships and all the rest of it. And, you know, and I think it's about capturing that age group at a young age to make them kind of understand about healthy relationships. You know, what does a good relationship look like? What does a bad relationship look like? So they can go on and, you know, because I think that's where in the past it kind of fell down. I'm not blaming schools or educational departments. Nothing, you know, it's just that there's more awareness for it, especially now, around domestic violence and, you know, the consequences of being in a bad relationship, a toxic relationship. And it's about being able to identify when you're in one, or, you know, because it's, when you're in one, it's difficult, isn't it? Because you're in it and there's all the emotions and stuff and it's all going on and, you know, and it takes someone independent outside almost to say, look, you know what, this is, you know, is everything all right? I've seen documentaries where parents they feel uncomfortable, but they have to bring up the subject sometimes because they identify that, you know what, I'm not sure, you know, doesn't sound like a good relationship. Do you know what I mean? Obviously not with the kids. I'm talking about old people in their 20s and 30s and that kind of thing. And vice versa, people that are in it, if they do identify they're in a bad relationship, sometimes they feel, they don't feel, I don't know, they feel it's difficult to go and approach people outside independently. And even parents and friends, you know, I've spoken to people that I've worked in domestic violence services before, and some people feel comfortable about it, but not everybody does. And they keep it very, very quiet and very underhand. And it's not their fault. They feel, they don't know. I think they feel scared. Mm-hmm. It's one of the reasons. They feel uncomfortable and they're not sure how people will react to what they might be saying to them if you know, about what's been happening. It sounds, you know, when you watch something about it or you hear about it, it's like, oh, well, why doesn't the person just do this? But it's so much more, there's so much more depth to it, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a lot of shame for all parties involved, you know, even if you are someone who is abusing somebody else, the idea of the label of abuser is just carries so much shame with it. The label of being a victim or survivor also carries so much shame with it. You know, you feel as though you should have recognized the things that were happening and that you should be able to do something about it. But the problem is, in this country at the moment, is we're in a cost of living crisis.
Yeah,
you know, yeah. Rents are astronomically high.
Yes, 100%,
it's almost impossible to live as a single person by yourself, let alone a single person with children. Salaries are not increasing at the same level as the costs are. You know, every single thing is just, you know, ramping up cost wise at the moment. So the idea of saying to somebody, "Well, why don't you just leave?" Actually, that's almost impossible.
Yeah.
And then you have the other sort of flip side. Disabled people are up to 4 times more likely to be in an abusive relationship than able-bodied people. So, you know, that in itself is a huge challenge, because a disabled person who relies very much on maybe universal credits and disabled benefits, might be living in social housing, you know, they might not even be in a position to be able to get out of that relationship. They might be completely reliant on their abuser because they're their carer. You know, you've got vulnerable people who their mental health isn't strong enough to be able to leave that person at that moment in time, because abuse, especially psychological abuse, chips away at your confidence and it takes away your agency. Yeah. And, you know, you end up thinking that you are the problem. So, you know, it's really not that easy for people to leave. And there are support networks out there. There are refuges for women to escape to. If you are a man being abused, there is very little support for you. So, you know, it's really challenging. And I think the more we can help with the education side of it with younger people, the better. I mean, the government recognises this, so they've launched a programme to try and tackle domestic abuse. And part of that is changes to the curriculum, which is very welcome. But, you know, you look through the curriculum and it's still fairly vague, and the onus is still pretty much on teachers to then decide what they want to bring into that. So really, yeah, the purpose of We Stand is to try and alleviate some of that pressure on some of those other groups and increase the education, so that, you know, I feel like we should be making more progress, really, with stopping abuse.
No, of course. It's a very complex area,
Yeah.
You know, and I think it's brilliant that about what yourselves are doing to help and contribute, you know. We're just going to another quick ad break and we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
A for horses, B for mutton, C more cheeks, dig for victory, E bar gold.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle Magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better.
Marks and Spencer.
Add Health Triangle Magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
T for two.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So, Claire, basically, is there any case examples you can give of how the organisation have helped, or on a wider level, or any kind of examples you can give at all?
Well, I mean, we're still really in early days at the moment. So, whereas, like, organisations like Refuge are helping victims themselves, our aim is really to educate, and it's for that younger group particularly that we want to work with. So this next 12 months is all about testing and doing research and making sure that, you know, the way that we think that we want to do this work is actually the way it should be done. So we're going to be holding a series of focus groups with sixth formers initially. We're looking at working with some university students, college students, and, you know, young people in the working environment, so that we can really get their input as to what they know, what they don't know, what they think a healthy relationship looks like. You know, what are their assumptions that they're making? What is the conditioning that they've experienced? So that we can really understand how we want to put this performance together. So essentially what we will be doing, because we've got these amazing group of people who, you know, Becky and Kirsty day in, day out, do these interactive performances. So what they do is they put a play on. There'll be like the first half will be a performance where, you know, you can actually see in action in front of your eyes the sorts of behaviours that people display when they're like doing these kind of coercive controlling behaviours. And then the second half of the play is an interactive discussion with those actors still in character. So the audience can really start to drill down into, well, why are you doing that? What does this mean? What does this mean? And the idea of it is so that people can start to recognise their own behaviours. People can start to think about, well, am I doing this, or have I witnessed this, or has this happened to me? And having the psychological support side of it as well means that we can then provide them with somewhere to go to get extra help. We can then provide with more education services. So this next 12 months is all about getting all that groundwork in place so that we can start doing the performances, start really helping to shift people's attitudes and understanding of what coercive control and psychological abuse is. And then we'll be starting to build upon that foundation with, you know, more education materials and building into the curriculum directly, I would say, at that point. So we've got to start somewhere.
it's brilliant. I mean, there's loads. It sounds like there's loads going on, you know. And it sounds like also like We Stand will probably evolve. I've got this funny feeling because it might, you know, when things start off a certain way, but then it takes on, there's more of a bigger kind of aim, objective. And I think for the moment, and what you're doing is huge anyway. I mean, that's a brilliant, it's fantastic objective to aim for, but it almost sounds like that will be the beginning part. And then in 12 months time, there's going to be like another aim and objective, another tier level to hit as well. Would I be right about that?
Yeah. We definitely, you know, I mean, there's always a sort of balance to be had, especially when this isn't your full-time job, to try and, you know, drive some stuff forwards without trying to go too big too quickly. So the testing and the research phase is really, really important, just to make sure that we are going to be pitching this in the right way and formulating what it is that we need to be doing. But, you know, in the future, we want this to be a nationwide sort of performance that we can be putting on, which means it's got to be more than like one troupe of players. We would like to also make a film so that there's a film version of it which can get out.
Fantastic. That's brilliant.
Yeah. And then, as I say, the sort of curriculum based support and building the right sorts of materials. I think we need to probably partner up with some other charities to do that as well, which we are really happy to do. So, you know, there is so much we can be doing with this. It's really, really exciting. I think we're limited by just our own sort of vision and time.
100%. I actually do want to ask you, how do you juggle like your full-time work and then doing this, and you've got the kids as well? You're a superwoman, you know. I mean, this is like, don't know how you do it all, you know.
I have to get up early and, you know, you just end up juggling stuff, really. So I like to try and get up at a decent time in the morning. So I have a couple of hours before, like, family are up and I have to start work to get some of this other stuff done. Work in the evening sometimes. Trying to not work at weekends, I have to say. I used to do a lot of work at the weekend, but now I'm just too tired. So I have to rest. I can't keep going at that pace anymore. But yeah, I mean, you know, you can do an awful lot of stuff when you try and structure your time sensibly, you know.
Absolutely. So, yeah. No,
and I have an amazing partnership, but it's not just me doing it on my own. So.
No, of course, I'm sure. What do you think is the biggest barrier for lasting change to happen with cases of abuse in a relationship?
Well, my opinion is that this is about, there's a massive issue with polarization. So I feel as though there is this kind of, because of the like, there's victims and there's perpetrators. Yes, that is a thing, of course. And in a criminal sense, perpetrators need to be taken out of society at the extremist end so that they can, you know, make amends for the things that they have done. And people feel that that is, you know, it justifies taking them out of society so that they aren't then impacting other people. I completely get that at that level. But at the level of kind of where abuse usually starts, which is usually much more subtle, more of an insult, building into actually using physical violence, it normally starts with some kind of coercive controlling or psychological abuse of some kind. And for, you know, except for the very few people who are truly perhaps of a psychopathic tendency, I like to think that human beings have humanity and can see the error of their ways and can change if they want to. So if someone can really own the things that they have done and take accountability for that, and can see that they've hurt somebody and that it's because they have been conditioned, they have deeply ingrained opinions and like values that sit right inside you that most people never really explore. If you can start to unearth some of that stuff, it is possible for people to change the way that they are, and to not, you know, to reverse that abuse. You know, there are case studies, there are people out there who have managed to do that. So that is something I feel like we need to be a little bit more compassionate about in our society, because for me, the more we keep polarizing and putting people in a perpetrator or a victim bracket, I feel that that is, and this is extremely controversial, I'm sure, I feel as though that is actually not allowing us to make the progress that we need to, because the people who are committing certainly psychological abuse are still within the realm of being able to change their ways, really look at themselves and why they're doing the things that they're doing.
And get that help, isn't it? It's about them getting that help.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. That. Sorry, go on.
No, you go.
No, what you're saying makes a lot of sense, 100%. I think it's quite normal for people to kind of judge a domestic violence situation. No, we don't agree with domestic violence. None of us do. Mm-hmm. However, to be able to help the situation and also stop the person from reoffending, because often this is what happens. You know, you get that situation where the person is in that relationship and they offend. There's an injunction. I'm talking at high end level now, where there's an injunction put in place, and the relationship does break down. And even though it's very difficult, it can take averagely 10 to 15 years for a relationship to break down and for the person to leave the alleged perpetrator and to get away. It can take a very, very long time because, you know, there's a lot of complexities behind it. And then that person, now, if they're not getting the right help to identify that, look, I've got a problem, you know, I've got a problem with relationships, and they're just going to go on and reoffend.
Exactly.
You know, we've got to identify what the issues are and offer that person the support. And they've got to want to help themselves and the person they're with. There's a two-way process here. There needs to be the person saying, do you know what? I've got some problems, you know, when it comes to relationships, which, you know, and I I'm causing harm. I don't want to do that. I want to change. And then, and I know there's groups out there. I'm sure I've heard of this. There's groups out there for people that to attend and all the rest of it. And, you know, but I do agree with you. You've got to understand where the person's coming from, what their issues and challenges are, to be able to put in place, what kind of strategies, whatever they might be, to try and help that person. Otherwise, there's going to be reoffending. And it often does happen. I've seen it happen. I've sat on a Marac before. Just for our listeners, a Marac is where boroughs discuss like the top 5-10% of most, devastational domestic violence cases. I've heard a lot of gruesome cases before in the past, which I'm not going to go into. This is not the forum for it. But the point is that we don't want to hear about reoffending. There's got to be that outlay where someone can go and, seek help, basically, to try and stop it. Because domestic violence has increased, especially during COVID. Yeah. People couldn't go out. They were trapped with the alleged perpetrator. And so, and there's repercussions around that. But sorry, Claire, go on. I'm just kind
of... No, I completely agree with you. I mean, it's in order for us to heal this sort of gaping wound that we have in society, we need to be able to give people their respect back, in as much as if we keep just telling them that they're bad people and lock them away or separate them from their families or fine them or whatever it is that we end up doing, all the relationship breaks down and nothing is ever resolved and they just move on to somebody else. No one's learning anything. No one's unlearning anything. No one's sort of dealing with their conditioning. So what hope do we have as a society that we can actually make a difference, a lasting difference, when we're not really ever really addressing the issues? So, you're absolutely right. There needs to be something in place that supports people to change. Not everybody will want to or be ready, and that's just something we have to accept. But there should be far more people who actually really do want to change, but they can't do that whilst they don't recognise that there's something that needs changing and we're tackling the wrong part of what actually needs to change. So there's fundamental like values and things that you do need to address. If we're looking at it in a purely medical way, we're not going to be addressing those things. So this is partly why we've partnered up with Divergent Lives, because they have a very progressive and refreshing way of looking at mental health and the causes of these kinds of issues. So
absolutely. I suppose the other thing is, what should people do who are worried they are experiencing abuse or hurting someone they love?
So there are two places you can go. So Refuge is the best place to go if you are feel like you're worried that you're experiencing abuse, or a friend of yours or a relative of yours is experiencing abuse. And you can ring them. You can, if it's safe for you to do so, you can, just Google Refuge. It literally is that, and they will come up. Talk to a friend, somebody you can trust. Don't keep it to yourself. But obviously, you need to be able to do these things in a safe way. If you're someone who's at school, going to talk to a trusted teacher. If you can open up at work, a lot of workplaces now have employee assistance programs, which are completely confidential. So that could be a good place to start. If you are worried that you are actually somebody who is hurting somebody else, then you can contact Respect. And they, again, you can Google them. They have a phone number you can call. And they are there to, in a non-judgmental way, support people to make change. If you are really worried about behaviours that you are doing or seeing or feeling or whatever, then you can get help either as a victim or as somebody who might be hurting somebody else. So that's Refuge and Respect.
Thank you for that. If anybody wants to get involved and donate or become a volunteer, which is the best way to go about it?
So we are desperate for some help because, as I say, we're all really, really busy women. And we're running this project and we're all doing it off the side of our desks at any sort of spare moment that we have. So we would very much appreciate donations. You can do that through our website, which is www.westand.community. And there's a big orange badge in the corner which says donate. So you can just go on there. And at the moment, it's linking to Just Giving. So you can make a donation through that. But we also would really appreciate actual time from people. So if anybody is a social media guru and has some time to do some social posts for us, I would be very much looking for somebody who could work in a voluntary capacity, even if it's just like an hour a week or something like that, just take some of that off our plates, because it's really hard doing the whole social media thing. Anything to do with branding and PR, if somebody wants to kind of muscle in and help us with any of that side of things, that's always really welcome. Anyone who has any fundraising specialties. And then the other thing that we really want to do is to actually talk to survivors, whether you're male or female or identify in any other way, whatever your background is, we would definitely welcome getting your stories or becoming part of our research or in a focus group. So you can go onto the website, you can fill out a contact form, and all of that comes through to me, and then I can get in touch with people and get them on board in whatever way that they want to, really. You know, time is such a massive gift for nonprofits, especially when we're all kind of, you know, doing it ourselves off the side of our desk, and we would appreciate any of that sort of support would be amazing.
Brilliant. And Claire, if people want to reach out to you just to maybe talk a bit more about what yourselves are doing, or they need help or that kind of thing at all, can they link you that way through the website as well?
Yeah. Website is the best way to go. So westand.community there's a contact form on the homepage. There's my email address is on there, so you can just drop me an email or you can fill out the form. That comes straight through to my email, and I can and take it from there, really. So yeah, if people want to get in touch, or they're concerned about friend, or they're worried about, you know, something that, you know, they're just not really sure, because sometimes ringing these like national helplines, it's amazing, they have an amazing service, but that taking that step to say, am I making this up? Because that's what goes through your head when you are a victim of this kind of abuse. You feel like you're kind of going a bit crazy. So sometimes it's having a really friendly voice talk to who's not going to judge you. Just, you know, that's fine. You can drop us an email and we can point you in the right direction, or just give you a little bit of reassurance and you know, just give you a bit of an online hug, I suppose, because we're all really lovely people. Life is hard, so there's no judgment.
Thank you, Claire. That's been brilliant. And thank you for your time today. I much appreciate it.
No, thank you so much for having me on. It's been lovely. Thanks, Gavin.
No worries. And thanks to our listeners. You know you can find me at GavinJ417 on Instagram. Until next time, take care.